So,
yes, that's me. Rick Gallagher started his intervention by saying that the archive is just a metaphor. I'm a historian, so I would like to suggest something more tangible, and I would like to suggest a few types. This will not be a developmental description of the archival institution, but I would like just to suggest a few types. At the beginning of the birth of the modern archive, there was the monastic archive, the archive of the monastery, which was born sometime around the 11th, 12th century in Europe, and in a very strange way, the birth of the archive coincided with something which we know very well today, that is the preservation of memory. First modern archives came into being at the time when monasteries took over the task of caring of the dead. Instead of widows who lived on average 19 years longer than their deceased husbands, the monks took over the task of remembering the dead, and later on, not much later on, but from the 13th century, a new invention, the purgatory, came to the help of the monasteries in this new division of labor, and we owe a lot to the purgatory in the birth of the archive. You know, although we don't have purgatory anymore, but you still might remember that the purgatory is a place where you reside just for a temporary period of time, and you have the chance to go to heaven. But in order to be able to go to heaven, there's the need for active intervention from the relatives who remained on earth. They should exercise real care to do this, and this is what the monasteries undertook, to help the dead to leave the purgatory. But the monasteries naturally wanted to remember only those dead who were useful for them, who left a property, especially real estate land, to the house, and in the legal battles of the monasteries with the court, with the state, or with neighboring landowners, they needed documents in order to be able to prove that a certain piece of land had been left to the monastery by the dead person. This is why they started writing the stories, the history of the house, and produced archives, but in Western Europe, in large parts of Western Europe, they produced things which were called Kopienbücher in German, copy books. They copied original documents, they forged these documents, and so with the birth of the archive, there was more modern archive, because there were archives already in Greek city states, but I'm talking about the birth of the modern archive. We witnessed the birth of institutionalized forgery and also the care of the memory of the dead. So that's the first model, the monastic archive. Let me suggest another model, and this is the encyclopedic archive, which we know quite well. And let me quote from the unjustifiably famous book by Derrida, The Archival Fever, where he wrote that Diderot and D'Alembert assumed the authority to impose a new law, a new ordering principle, underlying any form of knowledge from which they decided not only what would constitute an archivable piece of knowledge, but how this single corpus would constitute a system of synchrony in which all the elements articulate the unity of an ideal configuration. This is the archive which is so well known to us, mostly via Foucault, his work in the archaeology of knowledge and the order of things, where he wrote that the, and I try to quote him, he claimed that archives are textual schematizations that forcibly produce knowledge according to the archive's institutional power structures. The corpus is programmed for its proper or traditional reception to, so that it repeats a pre-described citation, a performative repetition. The archive does not only preserve, but it disciplines. The structure of the archive determines what can be stored, such that history and memory are determined by the material conditions and technological methods used in this ever-developing project of general archiveology, and so on and so forth. So this is the archive we usually fight against. This is the archive of the state. This is the typical state archive. This is the archive which, according to a certain unknown Franz Knöpfler, who was once the director of the Bavarian Archival Administration in 1936, he said, there is no practice of racial politics without the mobilization of source documents which indicate the origin and development of race and people. There is no racial politics without archives, without archivists. So the archive is the site of the horror. That's where the state really stores the laws which decide what can be said, what can be articulated, what is valid and what is not. But let me introduce another archive, and that's the Darwinian archive. Archive perceived by Charles Darwin. I quote from a very strange book by him, where he says, archaeologists are probably not aware how much they owe to worms for the preservation of many ancient objects. Coins, gold ornaments, stone implements, etc., if dropped on the surface of the ground, will infallibly be buried by the castings of worms in a few years, and will thus be safely preserved until the land at some future time is turned up. This is from his book, which went by the title The Formation of the Vegetable Mould Through the Action of Worms. In that book, Darwin argued that the topsoil of the earth, the matter we live on, is but decomposing residue, decaying matter, fossil record. The present is thus a parasite on the almost dead traces of the past under our feet. There is an archive beneath us, and in order to understand ourselves, our lineage, and the direction we are coming from and heading to, as this is not Darwin, as individually is the extension of the person back in time, we should just look for the remains of the dead mediated by the worms for the decomposing archive. Now, this is how Darwin, and it was not only Darwin, these were the geologists of the middle of the 19th century who looked at their science, the Earth, as a real archive. But let me tell you, it was not just such life scientists or geologists who looked at the archive in such a way. And let me just read one sentence by Halbwachs, who was the father of collective memory, who wrote that most groups engrave their form in some way upon the soil and retrieve their collective remembrances within the spatial framework thus defined. So Halbwachs also had this idea that, and he wrote that beautiful book on the topography of Jerusalem, according to this persuasion, that we somehow leave traces on earth, we inscribe our history in the topsoil, and in order to be able to remember, we need spatial traces in order to keep our memory. So it's not only Darwin, but Halbwachs as well. But let me introduce, or just mention, another archive, which is becoming very, very important nowadays, and that's the Comtean Positive Archive. Comte thought that by consolidating a pacification system in the framework of the archive, it makes it possible to forget the particular. We need the data in order to be able to know the past. And in a sense, I would like to argue, but I have no time to do this here, that the present development of data archives, non-linear, non-narrative databases, go back with their roots to this archive in the second half of the 19th century. But I would like to mention my last category, which is the distributed archive. And the distributed archive, the archive what Rick talked about, is the archive the proliferation of which we are witnessing today. And this is the archive which makes the Foucaultian idea more or less completely invalid. This is an archive where there is no centralized, central classification system in existence anymore. This is not the state archive. This is not a centralized system. This is a distributed set of institutions with their own logic, which are competing and disagreeing with each other, which are introducing their own system of retrieval, storage, taxonomies. And in this sense, it is not possible for us to say anymore that the archive is just the archive of surveillance, the archive of suppression, or as Derrida said, the archive of super suppression. In this sense, the proliferation of the Preminger film archive type institutions help us in order to see that even at the time, in the end of the 1970s, beginning of the 1980s, when Foucault wrote his works, what he wrote was a very useful exaggeration, but even that exaggeration does not hold anymore as a consequence of the development of this new type of distributive archive.